Let's look at 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 1 through 6. I wouldn't mind singing. I wouldn't even mind announcing when I'm going to sing, but it seems to cut the attendance considerably. So if I do sing, I'll creep up on you and have a captive audience then. 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 1 through 6. Now I, Paul, myself, beseech you by the meekness and gentleness of Christ, who in presence am base among you, but being absent am bold toward you. But I beseech you that I may not be bold when I am present with that confidence wherewith I think to be bold against some, which think of us as if we walked according to the flesh. For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war after the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds, casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalteth itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ, and having in a readiness to revenge all disobedience when your obedience is fulfilled. In verse 2, we notice that Paul refers to some in the church at Corinth who thought of him or who had accused him of walking according to the flesh. And that's a stinging accusation to a man who was the kind of person that Paul proved himself to be. I can't think of anything that would hurt a man of God, such as Paul was, than the forthright accusation that he was motivated by the flesh. In verse 10, they had this to say about Paul: his letters are weighty, say they, but his body presence is weak and his speech contemptible. Now, to a person who's involved in teaching, a person who's involved in preaching the Word of God and appearing before congregations, though there may not have been a large congregation there, to have it said of them that their body presence is weak, evidently had a very poor personality, and his speech was contemptible. There was not a more damaging accusation that could have been made against Paul than that he was a weak and contemptible preacher of the gospel of Christ, plus saying earlier that he was a man who was motivated by the flesh. I think Paul is one of the most spiritual men that ever lived. And when they said that Paul was motivated by the flesh, they didn't mean that he is involved in drunkenness and fornication and things of that nature. It simply means that based upon fleshly ideas and activities, Paul achieved all the things that he had achieved. That he was a man who plotted and planned and used the wisdom of the flesh, the wisdom of the world, and carnal things in order to achieve all the things that other people were saying he had done. Whatever success he'd had at Corinth, someone says, well, you think he was successful? If he had not used fleshly things, he wouldn't have been successful in building this church. Paul's spirituality is questioned and it is judged. And I think we can see in these verses that I've read some six proofs of Paul's spirituality. Six things that I think prove that Paul was not motivated by the flesh. There are things that we can see that he has done. There are some things we can see that he didn't do. But at least there are six things that are adequate in proving that Paul was not a man motivated by the flesh. First of all, in verse 1, I think we can see that Paul was a spiritual person because he appealed to spiritual things. Notice, now I, Paul, myself beseech you by the meekness and gentleness of Christ. The meekness and gentleness of Christ. If Paul had been a fleshly person, I don't think he would have invoked meekness and gentleness. I think perhaps he would have appealed to the power and glory. You know, that's the way the world thinks. They think of things that are powerful. They think of things that bring glory and honor to the flesh. And I can't think of anything that denies the flesh any more than the meekness and gentleness of Jesus Christ. And this is what Paul appealed to. Meekness means enduring all things with an even temper. Gentleness has in it the idea of fairness and not insisting on just rights. So Paul, first of all, says, I appeal to you and I beg you by the gentleness and by the meekness of Jesus Christ. And he uses this identification of himself then, who in presence am base among you, but being absent am bold toward you. This is not really what Paul thought of himself. It's what those who were his accusers and detractors said of him, that whenever he was present, he was a lowlife. Maybe you're familiar with the term poor white trash. That's what they said about Paul, if you want to translate what they were saying about him into our modern sociological context. They were saying, why, Paul, he's not anything but just plain lowlife white trash. And he said, they say, when I'm absent, I'm very bold, and that means to be full of cheer and hope, of confidence. What they're saying is that when Paul has to face us, he hangs his head, he rakes his toe in the dirt, he doesn't give us eye contact, he's really not as well educated as he claims to be, he's just pure white trash. But boy, you let him get away from us, let him get a pen and a piece of paper, and boy, he's just full of confidence. And it indicates that they felt he was cowardly. And Paul is saying now, I beseech you people, that is me, myself, it really emphasizes he's not talking about anyone else other than himself, who've been accused of being bold in my absence, and I'm a lowlife and poor white trash. Paul said, I beseech you, I beg you, according to the gentleness and meekness of Jesus Christ. I think that demonstrates a spirituality when people say, let us compare and look at our lives and look at the meekness and gentleness of Christ. And I think that's what Paul is trying to get these people to do. I think his spirituality is seen in the power that he refused to use. In verse 2, Paul indicates that if he wanted to, he could have used apostolic power. But I beseech you that I may not be bold when I am present with that confidence wherewith I think to be bold against some, which think of us as if we walked according to the flesh. I believe Paul is saying, I beg you people not to force me to use the boldness that I have at my command. And I think he's talking about apostolic power. Paul had the power to destroy. He had the power to kill. I think Paul could have invoked apostolic power and slain his detractors. I think he could called in every conceivable fatal disease. I think Paul could have created heart attacks. I think Paul could have created strokes. I believe that God would have allowed Paul to use this kind of power. But Paul said, I do not use it. And I'm not going to use it. And I believe it's a mark of spirituality when a person possesses that kind of power, and when they're wrongly accused, antagonized, and debased in every way, and yet they do not use the power they possess, but simply appeal to the meekness and gentleness of Jesus Christ in order to prove their sincerity and their spirituality. You often wonder what a less spiritual person would have done with apostolic power, the kind of power that they had. You know, if you think about it, those who possessed apostolic power to heal also possessed apostolic power to destroy. In other words, there's two sides, I think, to apostolic power. One is not only to restore, but the other is to take away health. I don't think they only had power in one way. They had power in both ways. They could take health or restore health, but it's a mark of their spirituality that we do not see the power to destroy used, but we do see the power to heal and mend and restore. Paul said, I have that power, and I've chosen not to use it. I think also we can see in verse 3 that he had a spirituality that can be seen in the war that he refused to fight. Notice verse 3, for though we walk in the flesh, we do not war after the flesh. Paul acknowledged himself as a human. He acknowledged himself as being in flesh, but he's not saying, I'm a sinner in the sense of involved in all sorts of sins. It is even said of God that he was manifest in the flesh. Now, that's what Paul means by, I am in the flesh, though we walk in the flesh. He's simply acknowledging himself to be a human being with human frailties. Paul's saying, I know that I'm a fleshly person in the sense that I have a body of flesh to contend with. But he says, we do not war after the flesh. And I think he means by that he's not involved in a constant conflict with the flesh because of his carnal appetite. The word war simply means to serve as a soldier, to fight. He did not rely on flesh, but he relied on spirit. He said, I'm a fleshly person, but the warfare that I'm involved in is not a fleshly warfare. It is a spiritual warfare. I think his spirituality is seen in the weapons that he used. In verse 4, he states, for the weapons of our warfare are not carnal. He specifically denies the carnality of his warfare. If I'm not involved in fleshly warfare, because the weapons that I use are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds. The word weapons is an instrument of a soldier. It means swords and spears and armor and things of that nature. Carnal has to do with the distinctive attributes and characteristics of the flesh. So he's saying, you don't see any swords in my hand. You don't see armor that I'm holding to defend myself, because the warfare, the war as a soldier, I'm not involved in these things. You look at the weapons that I use. They were not weapons that were based on the activity and the might of the flesh. But he says, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds. The word mighty means able or strong, morally as well as physically powerful, and the word stronghold means a fortress. Now, here's his idea. We're not using swords and armor and spears, things that you can see that are fleshly or carnal. Therefore, you have to say that our weapons are not carnal, but they're powerful. They're not things you can see, but they're powerful to the pulling down or destroying of the fortresses of evil. Paul probably had the history of the Jewish people in mind when he wrote this. I think he probably thought of the Israelites in Egypt. Perhaps more specifically, he thought of the city of Jericho and Joshua and the people of God who did not use swords and ramparts or anything of this nature to destroy the city. They simply marched around it. It was a most unfleshly kind of battle, a rather extraordinary and unique thing that they just obeyed God, marching around it, sounding horns. And I don't think there was any physics involved in it at all. You know, some people say, well, now what they did, they figured out the walls and the stone, and they had these horns were set at a particular musical pitch, and when they blew these things, it set up vibrations and shook the walls down. I don't believe that. I believe God tore them down because they obeyed him. I don't think you have to look for physics in the miracles of God. Then we see Paul's spirituality in the success that he achieved. Paul said, casting down imaginations, and I think he means using the power of God, that he was able to achieve a measure of success. Casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God. Now, when we say the word imaginations, and we're thinking about the things that we imagine. Back then, King James didn't mean that. It meant reasoning and things that are brought out and to pass through calculation. It has a reference really to mathematics and reasoning through complicated mathematical problems. Paul said, casting down, throwing down things that people, conclusions that people have arrived at through fleshly calculations. He believed that he had been successful in throwing down the carefully reasoned arguments of the philosophers and meeting everything that had been thrown at him that was of a philosophic nature. Casting them down, and all these high things that exalt themselves against God. 1 Corinthians, the first chapter, deals with the vanity of trying to find God by wisdom. Paul said, I met these issues, I met these arguments, and I cast them down, I threw them aside, and it was by the power of Almighty God, and brought into captivity. It literally means to make a prisoner of war every thought. You know, here's a man who learned how to capture thought and ideas and make it a prisoner of truth. Not only did he cast down the wise philosophical contradictions against the word and truth of God, but he was able to, by his preaching, capture them and enslave them so that people could see them for what they were. And then I believe Paul's spirituality is seen in the readiness that he possessed to do the will of God. And having in a readiness to revenge all disobedience when your disobedience is fulfilled. Now the latter part of that means you people who will obey. And everyone who doesn't obey, then I will deal with them when I get there. And I want you to know that I am ready. That is, I'm prepared in every way. I have active, zealous plans ready to carry them into effect and to bring revenge, which simply means to execute right and justice. He doesn't mean I'm going to punish, but he does say, I will bring to justice those people in the church at Corinth who will not be brought into obedience to the truth of God. When I come, I'm ready to execute judgment. You know, there's something to be said about the spiritual strength of a person who's willing to meet the issues that are unpleasant as well as those things that are pleasant. You know, there's two sides to a minister, and maybe a lot more than that from the viewpoint of words that are used to describe what he ought to be. There's shepherd, that indicates love and concern and looking after the sheep that are astray and things of that nature. And then there's the overseer, the bishop, the person who was brought to a particular Roman city and set over it so that he could oversee it and make sure that it had all of the things needed that it needed. And there's the preacher, the one statement Paul makes, I'm ready to preach it to you also, the gospel of Christ. Paul was ready to do everything that the ministry involved, and there was another side. And Paul, I'm sure he'd rather compliment, he'd rather have people pleased with what he had to say. But Paul said, I'm ready if people do not obey the truth, and I'm ready to bring their disobedience to justice. know, most of the times we talk about spirituality, and a person who's spiritual is someone that cries all the time. I don't know whether you've ever noticed that or not, but a lot of people say, well, he's a spiritual person because he cries a lot, and he never says a bad word about anybody. Isn't he spiritual? Well, there's another side to being spiritual, and that is criticizing what needs to be criticized. And I think it was a mark of Paul's spirituality that he said, I'm ready to see that justice is done. I'm ready to see that the disobedient are dealt with. I mean, oh, that man, he's so spiritual, he just wouldn't hurt a flea. He's so spiritual, he wouldn't say a bad word against anybody. Well, I remember one fellow who was said to be spiritual, and he told me, he said, you know, he said, every church in the community loves me. And he said, you know why, Brother Penn? He said, why? On Monday I'll go to this church, and Tuesday I'll go to, and they have revivals, I go to all of them, and they all ask me to pray. I thought, boy, you don't have much if it'll wear that thin. You don't have much if you wear that thin. The idea that spirituality is sentimentality. Spirituality is a lack of backbone. A fellow just won't say anything bad about anything, even the devil, you know. I mean, he just can't bring himself to say anything bad about even the devil. Somebody said he wouldn't criticize the devil when he talked about the devil. He said, well, he's always on the job. You know, at least you can say that about him. Pay a compliment to everybody and everything. Now, that's probably not spirituality. It's probably cowardice. Paul said, I'm not that kind of person. I'm ready to revenge. And that word doesn't mean I'm ready to get even, but it means I'm ready to see that justice is done. Spirituality. What is a spiritual person? I said, well, that's a person that holds their hands this way and looks very, very, no. A spiritual person is a person who involves himself or herself in spiritual things. That's a spiritual person. You sing spiritual songs. You offer spiritual prayers. You do spiritual work. That's a spiritual person. And these people said, oh, Paul's not a spiritual person. He's of the flesh. He depends on the flesh. You know, I think that hurt Paul. I think it irritated him. I think he was ready to say, look at what I do. Look at what I say. Look at what I don't do. And you can see that I am a spiritual person. Can't be spiritual if you're not saved. You can be religious, but you can't be spiritual. This evening we're going to sing a hymn of invitation. If you're here and you're lost, would you not come and trust Jesus Christ? Paul appealed to the meekness and gentleness of Christ. And this meek and gentle Christ came not to make of himself a reputation, but to save us from our sins. Would you not trust him this evening? If you're here and you need to follow the Lord in baptism, come and do it. That's following the teachings of Christ to be baptized. If you need to move your letter, you want to transfer your membership here, you do that during the invitation.